Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Audit Committee for Midlothian Council. We'll start, as usual, with a brief welcome and introduction. My name is Mike Ramsey, I'm the chair. To my left is Kenneth Laurie.
Gary Philley, Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support.
Ian Johnson, Head of Communities and Economy.
John Blair, Director of Resources with the Council.
Stephen Reid, External Auditor.
Sarah Croft, External Auditor.
Andrew Hardy, Councillor for Pennycook.
Peter Smale, Councillor for East.
Peter De Vink, I am the non-voting independent member of the Audit Committee. Non-voting.
Jim Muirhead, Councillor for Midlothian South.
I'm Jill Stacey, I'm the Chief Internal Auditor.
Elaine Greaves, Principal Internal Auditor.
Amber Ahmed, Internal Auditor.
James Polanski, Internal Auditor.
Janet Ritchie, Democratic Services.
Thank you very much. Apologies?
Apologies from Councillor Milligan.
Thank you. I note that Councillor Parry and Councillor Baird are also absent. However, with Councillor Smale, Councillor Hardy and Councillor Muirhead, we do have a quorum to proceed with business. So, order of business.
As set out on the agenda.
Mr. De Vink?
Yes. Unfortunately, I cannot really be present at the meeting afterwards until, because I have to leave at about 12:30. As such, I would like to really raise at this early point that I expected, as the Audit Committee papers, at least some financial papers. We today are faced in an area where Rome is burning and we have no financial papers. We also have a very significant issue that has been very much in the news about a fraud investigation that has now lasted almost 6 months. And we had hoped, or I had hoped, that we would have had at least some clearing and some idea about that in the current committee meetings. But most of all, we have been circulated, or I was circulated, the so-called budget book. And the budget book was a request of mine, so that we really get audited accounts, consolidated accounts. But the budget book does not give you consolidated account, it gives you just the different figures for the different units. But I would like to see all of that properly consolidated so that we can evaluate properly all the ratios that we in Midlothian are being faced with. So if I could raise that under this order of business now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. De Vink. As you say, it's probably something that we would be aiming to deal with in the session after the formal meeting, the self-assessment session, where we can discuss exactly how much and how little financial information this committee requires to see and in what format. Which we're hoping to deal with a little later. It's a shame that you have other commitments and may be unable to attend that in full, but it's certainly noted. In terms of the budget book, I think that might come under matters arising, but your comments are noted. As to the other matters, I'll ask Mr. Laurie to comment.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Following the last audit committee, I spoke to members of the committee in private about the Rhodes investigation. And as members will be aware, this matter is now in the public domain, and I had hoped to bring a report to the committee today setting out the actions which are proposed in relation to this. I have been unable to do this, but instead intend to set up an early special meeting of the Audit Committee to consider this matter, potentially following next week's council meeting that is subject to confirmation, but I will seek to confirm that as soon as possible.
Mr. Drink.
Sorry. And what about the audit book, and how could we get consolidated accounts from that? Because just for us all to have to add all the different figures, it's not something I can't do, but it's really not what I was looking for. I'm really looking for proper audited accounts where we do not look at 200 million of turnover, but at 350 or sometimes 392, all being mentioned in the figures that Ernst & Young have produced in their annual budget of annual accounts.
Mr. Fairley, could you comment?
So just for clarification, the budget book we've issued it provides members and staff and others details of each individual service budget. So it is very much focused on the breakdown of the budget by service. I certainly had a helpful meeting with the chair a couple of weeks ago now, where we talked about the development of the financial information that comes to the audit committee. And I think, Chair, if I can use your own words, the navigating through that forest of information that we could potentially provide and making sure that the right information is coming. So I very much welcome feedback from the development session later on so that we can make sure that committee gets what it needs to be able to do its job. So I'm very much in your hands what information you need and how we navigate through the different ways of presenting financial information and the breadth of financial information that's there to home in on what is key for you. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Smale.
Yes, following on Peter De Vink's point, I'm uneasy that we have this revenue budget, which almost certainly is already subject to major variations, partly on account of the climatic impact on Midlothian, and we don't seem to have any variance analysis at this meeting. We have relatively few audit committees now, and I just wonder if, even on a flash basis, it is possible as a standard for this committee always to have a report as to the variance that has occurred in the previous period since the last audit committee meeting.
I'm sure we'd be able to have an extract of information that's already being produced without too much difficulty. I think if we're wanting to compile something new, then we need to be using our session afterwards to specify exactly what it is that we're looking for. We don't particularly want the financial services team to be spending a lot of time producing figures that really don't do what we want. So I think we need to specify that. Councillor Muirhead.
No, I think the points are well enough made, and I think the development session next, you know, I would appreciate it being explained to me what the benefit of that would be. And as you say, we don't want people to produce figures just for the sake of it. But, you know, if we can maybe develop that discussion as to what benefit that and help that the production of these figures would be to us, if we can accept that, and of course we can agree that, and it's something that can be used to help us in our scrutiny of the council.
Thank you. I think that concludes order of business. Any declarations of interest? There being none, the minutes of the previous meeting, have we read? Do we have any comments or clarifications? Mr. De Vink.
Item under 4.2, matters arising, item 5.8. Will that be mentioned later on?
That 5.8. Sorry, I was looking at the wrong 5.8 there. Mr. Blair?
Chair, the last committee asked me to take an action to progress it, and I've taken the action and I've passed it to my colleague, Dr. Smith.
Dr. Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, education would take responsibility. There was two items that were outstanding. One of them was the risk register, and that's still in the process of being developed at the moment, along with other educational risks. and the physical risk register in terms of quality assurance, that is undertaken by staff who go out and do visits. So that item has been closed off.
Thank you very much.
Could I just ask if everyone has received a detailed budget book? Because I was getting it in a tiny little attachment to an email, and I felt it was probably not received by all of the members of the Audit Committee.
I think the question is simply, do the elected members have a copy of the budget book by default? Because I think the extra email was just to yourself and me as non-councillors. Is that a fair comment?
I've certainly received it, yep.
I'll take that as a yes. Thank you very much. If we're happy with the minutes, do I have someone to propose them?
I'm happy to propose the minutes.
Thanks, Councillor Hardy. Seconder? Councillor Muirhead? I'll sign those as a true record. Moving on, we now have public reports and the Audit Scotland report. Mr. Laurie.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The purpose of this report is to provide the Audit Committee with a summary of the Audit Scotland report, Local Government in Scotland, Challenges and Performances 2018, and also the Council's position in relation to the report's findings. A link to the full report has been provided, and I recommend councillors to look at that if they have not already had the opportunity. I do think it's a helpful document, and in fact, I think it's Exhibit 4 in the document starkly illustrates the challenge that Midlothian faces as the fastest growing council over the next 25 years. That's something, of course, that we're acutely aware of within the council, but I do think that the exhibit in that report does show the very particular position that Midlothian faces. The Accounts Commission, of course, produces an overview of issues that arise from local authority audits and impact on local government every year. There's two reports. The one that related to the financial overview was considered by this committee in December. The one in front of you today relates to the challenges and performance. And it does provide a high-level independent view of the challenges facing councils in Scotland, how councils are responding to these, and how service performance has been affected. And the specific areas of the report are set out in paragraph 2.3. There is, as an appendix, a scrutiny tool for councillors, which I think is helpful, and we've attached as appendix 1 to the report on the agenda today, and also an interactive online tool which contains performance information for individual councils. And again, these are items I'd recommend to councillors. The key messages identified in the report essentially, and it comes as no surprise, that local government in Scotland continues to operate in a complex and changing environment. That is in part about the significant pace of public sector reform, the substantial reductions in public sector spending, and the increasing demand for local public services. The importance of the transformational change agenda is, is emphasised. This is essential for all councils, and I think the point made in the report is that where this is properly scoped, resourced and well managed, then success is more likely. And that also has demands on us in terms of cohesive, decisive leadership required by councils at this time. The report also cites that while councils have done a lot to manage the impact of continued budget reductions, and indeed in many cases have managed to maintain or improve performance across a range of areas, the budget cuts are now actually having an impact on performance as well. And the recommendations identified within the report say that councils should ensure they are continuously improving their work, working to understand the local landscape and how the council operates within that, the long-term financial issues and scenario planning for that, the impacts of new technology, working with communities, the delivery of priority outcomes, robust change strategies, workforce planning and income generation. Now, all of these, of course, are matters which are under consideration within Midlothian. And at paragraph 3.5, we set out an outline of Midlothian's position in relation to the recommendations in this report. And that covers the Single Midlothian Plan, our work in relation to community engagement, the financial strategy reported to the Council in February of this year, the Delivering Excellence Framework that sets out our own proposals in terms of the future direction of transformation within the Council, and particularly our work with communities, digitally led change, the Entrepreneurial Council, and our workforce plans. So what we've endeavoured to do here relatively briefly is just set out where the Council is in relation to some of the challenges that are set out in the report. There's clearly much that needs to be done, but today the committee is asked to note the Audit Scotland report and the position of Midlothian Council in relation to the recommendations. I'm happy to deal with any questions which members may have.
Mr. Devink.
Yeah, very interesting, particularly the bit in italics. And I came to the four bullet points and looked at shared services. Maybe at some stage, when other questions have been asked, the Chief Executive could tell us a bit more about the progress as far as shared services are concerned, because we have tried that for a long time and it's always been rather found wanting. Finally, I just couldn't get my read about LGBF. Is that local government benchmark? Okay, thank you. Maybe you could comment on the shared services.
Mr. Loy?
Yes, happy to do so. I mean, at the moment, Midlothian has a number of shared services with East Lothian Council, I think a total of 10 to 12 different areas, most of them relatively small scale. I think probably the most significant of these is that we have a joint public protection office working with East Lothian, and also, of course, the police and health are involved in that as well. And I think that's been seen as a very innovative and positive development. Beyond that, we have shared services in terms of out of hours, in terms of our trading standards, which we run on behalf of East Lothian Council, mobile library services and one or two others. I suppose for me that while some of these have had significant service benefits, they are not in themselves significant contributors to bridging the budget gap. And I think that there is a requirement for the Council, and it goes back to this point really about the importance of cohesive and decisive leadership, not just within Midlothian, but across councils more generally, that I think decisions need to be made as to whether, as a council, and whether with partners, be it East Lothian or others, we're prepared to take more significant steps in terms of sharing significant areas of council business. I think as a senior officer team, we're positive about that. And we do have some other examples of shared services. A notable one is our shared chief internal auditor with Borders, which I think is progressing well. And we're also developing joint long-term waste solutions with City of Edinburgh. But I do think, and this is a matter I have discussed with other council chief executives locally, that there is an opportunity to do a lot more than that. I think the key thing there will be long-term political agreement that is the way forward, and that's something that we're intended to take forward in the near future.
Thank you. Mr.
Well,
again?
What I had hoped is that we would be able to really achieve very significant savings by having shared services. But while I was a councillor, we tried that quite hard, but somehow it didn't work. Has it been improved since those halcyon days?
Mr. Lorry.
Well, I think that the financial position concentrates minds on this issue to a greater degree than previously. I mean, certainly at an officer level, both in the context of City Deal, I guess also in the context of the proposals for regional education collaboratives, there is more of an appetite. I suppose that I would say is unless or until we move that from a willingness at a senior officer level and through to significant political decisions about a willingness to share major areas of service, then we won't make the breakthrough in terms of finances. But I think it's important we continue to pursue that agenda.
Councillor Muirhead.
I think we all expect, because of the financial position that we're in, that there will be more pressure to share services with other local authorities. But that can't be the only driver, and it has to. I think when you actually look and see the examples of shared services that are working, they're because they're quite clearly practical, good, practical, solid, justifiable reasons for the integration. And it, you know, it's not just the principle of working together. It's because individuals, at a more remote level, a lower level, within the structures, have seen the benefits of that and are prepared to work towards it. So I think there has to be real justification for doing it. But and it's not just about the gun being held to our head in terms of the finances. It has to be seen to be able to work and to provide real benefits for people living in all the council areas concerned.
Thank you. I just had a couple of points that I noticed as I was reading through the Audit Scotland report, and clearly the transformational change and savings areas are critical and continue to be, and it's a theme we've had through every audit committee so far. I'm pleased to see that the internal audit plan that we approved at the last meeting is focusing on some of the planning and restructuring areas to give us some assurance that those are being done in a robust manner and delivered well. The two specific comparisons I looked at which stood out for me was one was the workforce strategy, where Midlothian hasn't reduced workforce, and it's one of about six or seven councils that haven't reduced their workforce compared to many others who have had savings as a result of that. But of course, we're also the fastest growing council, which masks what we may otherwise have been able to achieve if we're in a static position. And the only other one, which was slightly disappointing in the charts that came out, was under the special performance indicators. And I don't know, Dr. Smith, if you might comment. The S6 results in the last 12 months for Midlothian dropped, and the national average has been gradually increasing. It had been increased up until then. I don't know whether there's any particular reason for that, if it's a statistical anomaly because the trend was improving. Could you comment?
I think for us it was an anomaly that year, because the five-year trend is showing improvement across all the areas. But if you looked at the S5 results the previous year, they were lower. So the S6, that's that cohort. So it's an anomaly for that cohort, because if you look at all the reports we've been putting forward in terms of delivering excellence in Midlothian, we have an improving trend across the board, and it's not just a one-year trend. It's, you know, you can see it's across the 5 years, so it's an anomaly.
I was hoping that was the answer, and it looked that way to me, but I just wanted to comment. Councillor Smale.
Yes, Chairman, just for your information, I have for some time been asking the officers for data on this question of labour efficiency, particularly in respect of the change to hourly rates, which was about 2 years ago, and the change to the overtime practices in the council, just to see whether, compared to other councils, we're actually producing taxpayer value in our use of the labour force.
Mr. Blair.
Yep. Councillor Smale did raise that earlier in the committee. We've actually got a meeting in the diary with Councillor Smale in the next couple of weeks, specifically on the labour aspects of operating the council. Purposely, we've delayed it to get a few years' starts following the introduction of low pay in October 16, if I get my years right. So there will be information coming to a future meeting of the committee on the impact of introducing revised pay and grading structures within the council.
Thank you. Any other comments on the Audit Scotland report? Thank you. Oh, Mr. Devink?
The scrutiny checklist, are we meant to fill that in and hand it in to you?
I believe it's self-assessment, but I'll be guided by Mr. Laurie.
Well, I mean, we certainly haven't suggested there's any specific requirements in that regard. I suppose I thought it would be useful for members, not least in terms of that discussion that you're having following the meeting, the informal discussion about the way ahead for the audit committee and just some discussion around about the remit. It might just be helpful in terms of informing that debate.
Thank you. I think we can take that report as noted and move on to the climate change report. Amber.
Thank you. This audit was undertaken to provide assurance that information in the Midlothian Council Climate Change 2017 report is accurate, compliant with the SSN reporting requirement and reflects current practice. A number of key controls were seen to be operating to ensure the climate change report complied with the SSN reporting requirements. A small number of errors and inaccurate information was identified during the review, and it was advised that these will be taken into account in the Climate Change 2018 report. There is no carbon management plan for the report year, and it was advised that a new carbon management plan should be in place. A discussion at the Corporate Management Team Strategic Leadership Group held in April 2018 made a commitment to progress this. The scope of the audit also incorporated a review of the Midlothian Integration Joint Board Climate Change 2017 report. The report did not contain any emission figures, and therefore we have not addressed any specific recommendations to the Midlothian Integration Joint Board. We have raised 2 high and 7 medium rated recommendations, which are detailed in the audit issues and management action plan in the report. The Audit Committee is therefore invited to review the contents of the audit report and endorse the agreed audit recommendations. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions, comments? I'm just getting slightly confused with CMTs. I notice under the high action, high priority action point number one, the reporting about a CMT. I'm just jumping between a carbon management team and a corporate management team. And I think it was the corporate management team that's just had a meeting in April to take things forward. But I'm not clear whether a carbon management team has been created as a result of that. Mr. Laurie?
Not at this stage, no. I mean, the first recommendation we discussed at the corporate management team, and I think our collective view was that the whole issue around about climate change features quite highly in our risk register. It is a matter of importance to the council, and we needed to inject a bit more urgency and have a more robust approach to it, which is why that first recommendation has been put against my name to try and ensure that we put the structures in place and the strategy in place to take this forward in a more robust way. I mean, that meeting was a week or two ago, so that action hasn't yet been taken, but we did feel it was important that we put a bit more emphasis on this than there has been in the past.
Thank you. My only thought in the format for reporting that we see generally. There's a section in most council reports for report implications, which cover things like resource, risk, single Midlothian plan, key priorities and so on. There is an element there for support to comment on supporting sustainable development. Would the carbon or climate management plan benefit by being focused on in a similar way?
Oh, as I've left my microphone on, I think undoubtedly yes. I mean, the challenge I think with that standard template we use for council reports is that we can vary and we change it from time to time to reflect changes in the key elements of the business of the council. But I think that in terms of the supporting sustainable development, that the carbon management plan should be the basis of that. So I don't think we need to change that. I just think we need to perhaps put a bit more focus on it, and that was certainly the result of the discussion we had at CMT.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions or comments? No, well, thank you for that report. The next and final report here is on purchasing cards. Mr. Polanski.
This audit, which was carried out as part of the internal audit plan for 2017-18, reviewed the adequacy of the internal controls in place for the Council's use of purchasing cards. Our audit identified that management implemented a number of systems, internal controls and procedures for purchasing cards, and the strengths are highlighted in the internal audit report. Generally, a sound system of internal control is in place as implemented by the business applications team. However, some examples were noted where employees were not complying with the cardholder guidance. Areas of improvement include suspension of cards for employees continuing to fail to verify transactions in good time, recovering unused cards, ensuring procurement compliance reviews are completed, enhancing the trading record. Some minor improvements were noted to ensure the Council claims for all VAT it's possible to claim for, and strengthening some of the associated purchasing card guidance. We have made 10 medium and 3 low-rated recommendations, which are detailed in the Management Action Plan in the report, and these have been accepted by management for implementation within reasonable timescales. The Audit Committee is therefore invited to review the contents of the audit report and endorse agreed audit recommendations.
Thank you very much. Councillor Hardy.
On the first page of the report, we can notice that the total purchase card spend increased from 122,714 in year 15-16 to £604,060 in year 16-17. Now, I note that this is partly because of the switch from corporate credit cards to the purchase cards, but without any figures provided for the amount spent on the corporate credit cards, it's very difficult to ascertain, is this an enormous spiralling in spend, or is this in line with the previous spend on the corporate credit cards?
Mr. Fairley.
Thanks, Chair. It's not a switch of spend just from corporate credit cards across. So the purchasing cards that we introduced removed the corporate credit cards, which were a smaller number, switched spend from petty cash, and also switched a number of low-value invoice-related transactions that were going through the system. So this is not additional spend. It's just using a more efficient route and more control route to allow budget holders to procure the goods and services they need. And I suppose the purpose of the audit was just to show the switch, the move and the volume going through, to put some of the other things that come through in this report in some context.
Councillor Hardy?
I take that point, but obviously the reduction in the spend in petty cash is, I mean, we're talking in less than 40,000. So without figures on the other areas you mentioned, such as these invoices and the credit card spend, we can't determine whether or not this is an inline increase or if this is an enormous increase in the spend.
Mr. Fairley?
Yeah, I suppose the scope of the audit didn't cover cover that aspect. And in terms of the arrangements for purchase card, it's really about giving budget holders an alternative and effective way to procure goods and services. We haven't set targets for spend that should go through the cards, etc. So it's just another mechanism in the armoury, if you like, in terms of how to procure the goods and services that principal teachers in schools, staff in care homes, staff in our depots, etc. need.
Councillor Hardy again.
Yeah, I appreciate the reasons for using the cards, but I think that as the audit committee, we can't properly audit something if we're not provided with all the relevant information, such as what was being used before. We were given a figure which shows an enormous increase, but we're not given the relevant figures previously to show where that increase has come from. Rather than tell me what the cards are for, are you able to provide information as to what spends have been reduced in other mediums so that we can see if the figures show a reasonable increase or if this is an enormous increase in the expenditure?
Mr. Fairley?
Certainly, I don't have that information to hand. I don't think it was part of the scope of the audit that was set out. It's very hard to track back how those goods and services would have been procured under the old way. So we only know what we know in terms of the information we have. We can't look at that 600,000 and say, prior to purchasing cards, what might have been petty cash, what might have been low-value invoices, what might have been on the corporate credit cards. We will have somewhere in the system details how much was on corporate credit cards, but it was relatively low. So a mixture of that, probably quite a piece of work to do to go through each invoice and determine how it would have been procured and paid for in the previous arrangements, which, as I say, it wasn't part of the scope of the audit, as I understand it. I appreciate I'm not giving you the answer you want, but it's because the information is not there.
Councillor Smale.
I wonder if I could address Councillor Hardy's concerns through a summation of what I think we are trying to show here. There seem to be three areas where things can go wrong with credit cards, an area which in the private sector always carries a bit of risk. One is the failure to reclaim VAT. Another is the use of the cards improperly for personal expenditure. And finally, you have perfectly well-intentioned use of the cards, but actually it's a supplier who's not within our framework contract. Reading this report, the impression I get is that all of these three captions added together do not appear to be material relative to this £630,000 worth of expend on the cards. We don't actually have any numbers, but I would be content if you would just confirm that the opinion of internal audit is there is no material abuse of these cards. That seems to be the drift of the report.
Ms. Stacey.
Yeah, there are kind of two key messages in terms of this by way of assurance to the audit committee is around the controls, around those key risks. So the opinion relating to that does provide reasonable assurance that the appropriate segregation and control framework is in place. There's some minor kind of compliance bit, but this is an introduction of a new methodology, and I think there's appropriate monitoring. Just need to make sure that that's followed through in terms of action to ensure the kind of compliance. The other aspect in terms of the key message relating to this is around the change and transformation dynamic, and I think just value for money, as Mr. Fairley has highlighted, some of the other processes in terms of invoice processing with large volume and low value consume huge amount in terms of administrative resource, as well as the kind of petty cash system the same. So the key message around this is whilst we're not able to demonstrate it because there wasn't that plan and actually that wasn't part of the scope, the key message is that there is a demonstrated shift into more efficient and effective from a control perspective administrative processes around the kind of payments. So I think from those two things, I think the value for money, efficiency, and the key controls assurance are the key elements from this piece of work. So hopefully that answers your questions in terms of concerns.
I suspect really to answer Councillor Hardy's question would have required a retrospective piece of work to have been done before the purchasing cards were introduced to get a status quo baseline of where the transactions were being done before we introduced purchasing cards to then compare the shifts, but clearly it's not possible now to find out and go back without a disproportionate amount of work to answer that question. But the suggestion is that it's now a much more effective method of making payments. And I suppose the only other question that arises is, can it be used more? But that's a general question rather than a specific. Oh, Mr. Fairley.
Well, absolutely. We're continuing to roll out cards to those staff that need them, where we can low value, frequent purchases is the most effective way, and it brings much more control around areas where we're still relying on petty cash to remove that as far as possible as well. That these cards are much more effective and provide a much greater degree of internal control. We'll keep going until we reach saturation point in terms of their use.
Councillor Muirhead.
I'm always concerned when any reports come to the Audit Committee where a sample of particular transactions have taken place and we've found some that are problematic. And I'm thinking in terms of the VAT. Out of the 30 purchases reviewed, three of them, 10%, had issues in terms of VAT. Was consideration given to going back and checking a bit wider than that to see what the implications are? Because obviously we're not claiming VAT back that we're entitled to as a problem. And also when we're talking about I've lost my train of thought. If you could answer that question.
Ms. Stacey.
Certainly our control samples, during that, it's a kind of reasonable sample based on the number of transactions going through that. There wasn't any consideration. Our sampling methodology is a kind of core part of the audit process. I think the key element here is around the improvement action that has been agreed. So in all expectation, if that improvement action is implemented in full, which we've got a commitment to that happening, it should address and actually identify any others where there was maybe an opportunity to reclaim that. But definitely going forward, put better arrangements in place so it's more automatic. So I think through the improvement action, I think we'll absolutely achieve what you're identifying.
That's important because it isn't just the issue of no being able to, for instance, get valid VAT receipts. It's also a behavioural issue or a performance issue in terms of not actually entering the information in. That there's actually VAT applicable in that type of situation. So sometimes it is difficult to get VAT invoices. I know myself that can sometimes be a problem depending on the supplier. But when it comes to just simply failing to put the VAT or to record it in the system, that is something that we really need to address. And as you say, it will be addressed by the actions that are being taken. And I take it we will do something to monitor that going forward, that's happening.
Absolutely. Standard practice is that internal audit would follow up the recommendations, and as you as an audit committee, we bring two reports per year to again give you assurance that those improvements have indeed been implemented and some proper evidence that the improvement in the control environment has indeed happened as a result of that implementation. So as part of our kind of routine monitoring during the year, we can hopefully provide assurance that of the implementation of those recommendations.
I'm not claiming to be a mind reader, Councillor Muirhead, but I wonder if what you were thinking of moving on towards was the cancellation of unused cards not having been implemented quite as much. Again, it's back to the training of behaviours. If the cards are suspended, if they've not been properly used on a bit more timely basis, it does provide an incentive to the card holder to get their paperwork and or their activity done a bit more timelessly. Dr. Smith.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, you know, in terms of the cards, the difference it's made business-wise, as a head of service, I used to sit on a Friday afternoon with the dreaded green slips, and I could be sitting with a pile like this, signing them off. So someone had to get an invoice in. They had to then process that invoice, put a green slip on it. We had to sign the green slips. It then had to go for payment, you know, and then it was processed there and then through to payments. In this way, there's an improvement in the payment of invoices, you know, to our local suppliers, which we say we want to do. There's less staff time involved in the dreaded green slips. There are still a few kicking around, but there's much fewer. And also there's fewer missing invoices. So in this way, you know, you don't have that debate with suppliers about, you know, we've not received the invoice. So in terms of, from my perspective and our managers, it's much improved the system. Yes, there can be tweaks and yes, we can improve it. But certainly in terms of time for processing that work, it's much, much improved.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions or comments? That concludes the public reports. We have no private reports. Date of next meeting, Mr. Laurie.
Yes, thank you. I mean, the agenda is silent on the date of the next meeting. There is, in fact, an audit committee scheduled for the 5th of June. But in discussion with my audit colleagues, because of the amount of resource being taken up with current investigation activity, there has been a suggestion that we might hold that meeting a bit later in June to allow more reports to come through and to allow the necessary work on these reports to be completed. So the potential delay of up to 2 weeks. Now, that would be a matter for the Council to decide, but I just wanted to flag that at this stage. And, of course, that would be separate from and in addition to the special meeting of the Audit Committee I mentioned earlier on in the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions on that? Mr. Devink?
It would be so helpful to have an idea of the date. Is it not possible to give us a date, even if it provisionally?
Well, I mean, I think it'd be good from the point of view of giving the maximum time for the reports to come forward, to have it the week before Council, as we're having it the week before Council in the current cycle. I note, however, that the Tuesday before Council is the date of both the General Purposes and the Planning Committee, so I think that might be quite challenging. But I think the week commencing the 18th would be the ideal from the point of view of the audit team, but clearly we need to look at what the possibilities were within that week, potentially sometime in the Tuesday or potentially the Wednesday, but I can't be more precise than that. Apologies for that.
Thank you very much. Any other business? No? In which case, meeting closed. Thank you very much for your time. The self-assessment session will move to the committee room, I believe.